all that matters. Welcome to the call. Before we get started, anything, are there any questions? Anything you want to focus on this week before I start talking about what I want to talk about? Anybody?
I'm Linda. I'm just a beginner, so anything you can give me, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, so are you in real estate, network marketing? What do you do?
Real estate.
Okay, good. Well, that's the key here. This is kind of whether your vehicle is real estate or whether it's internet or whether it's network marketing. Those are great vehicles. What we do here is provide the gas because you can't get very far because too many people get into real estate and they try it out and they say it doesn't work. We know it works. It's just learning how to deal with people and work with people and understand people. That is the critical factor to your success. So let's spend a few minutes on a big mistake. And that's one of the fun things that I get to do is I get to interview people after they've lied to you. Okay? Most of the time when people say they'll call you back or it's too expensive, we already know that that's a lie. And that you, when I put it this way, most people solve the wrong objection. So what I want to get to and talk about a little bit is the big complaint. When you do the studies and you do the research, it really shows that as a persuader, when you're talking to someone, whether it be about your network marketing business, about a property, about your product or service, whatever it is, on average, you're talking three times too much. You're over-persuading. You're vomiting all the features and benefits. You're talking way too much. And so, A, it's a great time management technique to talk three times less, but you have to realize you're just talking way too much. A great persuader is going to help the person persuade themselves. The challenges, let me just give you a couple of the challenges here that we're noticing. First of all, you're talking way too much. Second of all, what happens with people is when they go to ask for their business, ask for their credit card, ask if they'll buy or sell their home, is people, their demeanor starts to change, and it's freaking the person out. Because inside you're getting all nervous, this is it, ask for their credit card, ask for their business, you're taking way too long, and your demeanor's changing to the point where you're a different person when they first saw. So that is a huge thing. You have to understand that you're persuading the whole time, number one. And number two, you have to understand that when you ask for their business, A, it shouldn't surprise them, and B, it should be very seamless. It comes back to the story of this old farmer who didn't like the dentist, wouldn't go to the dentist, and finally he had a really bad toothache. It lasted him 6 months. He went to the dentist. And the dentist says, you know, I can't save this tooth. We're going to have to pull it. And this poor farmer says, pull it? Are you kidding me? How much does that cost? And the dentist says, well, we can pull it for $200. And the farmer's all, you kidding me? $200? How long does that take? So we can do it in a couple minutes. He says, $200 for a couple minutes? Are you kidding me? That's highway robbery. And the dentist said, well, if it's the time you're worried about, we can take as long as you want. Okay? What I'm saying is, Your call to action is less than 5% of your presentation. Here's something else you want to know, whether you're doing most of your business on the phone or face-to-face, is this. That should only be about 5% of your presentation. Most people make it 30, 40%, but the actual, what you're asking them to do should be about 5% of your presentation. And you should always develop your call to action before the rest of your presentation. And whether you're writing copy on the internet, whether you're talking to them face-to-face at their door, whether you're over the phone, you decide what you want them to do, what's your call to action, and you develop your whole presentation around that. Okay, that's critical, critical for your success. Your goal, as you become great persuaders, is to really understand human nature and why we do what we do. So one of the big questions I get when we teach the psychology of objections is, well, how do I know when it's time to shut up and ask for their business? If you're talking three times too much, you have missed that point. Because when we talk too much, you talk them out of the deal. For example, if your son or daughter went to you as a parent and said, hey, can I go to the cabin for the weekend because of this and this? You're like, okay. And I also want to go because of this and this and this. You're like, whoa, I don't think so. And this and this and this. And as a parent, you finally say, well, you can't go. And that's what happens when you vomit all the features and benefits of your product or service. Just like when you go buy a computer, you don't need to know everything that it does before you buy it. Before you buy a photocopier, you don't need to know everything that it does before you buy it, whether it's network marketing. we need to talk about. How do you know when it is time? Well, this is what great persuaders do. There's a couple things. There's the verbal and nonverbal. Now, if you're talking to them face-to-face, you want to understand that they're, how to put this, when you really learn to read their face instead of being worried about what to say next, their facial expressions will relax because they're not as tense. They've made a decision. Their facial expressions will relax. Another thing you could be looking for, too, whether it's real estate or whatever it is, they start looking at the paperwork more. They start reading the paperwork. They start flipping through the paperwork. It's now interesting to them. If they don't like what you're doing, they'll rarely look at the paperwork. If you're talking to a husband and wife, you will see approving glances at each other, a little smile here and there. You'll see a kind of a glimmer or a spark in their eyes where they've made the decision to do it. They'll lean a little closer to you. Because if you have repelled them, or if they're done with you, if they're indifferent, they'll lean further away from you. But if you get them excited, you develop rapport, they'll start leaning closer to you. And you'll notice, too, a slight nod in their head. They'll start nodding up and down in the yes motion just a little bit. And if they're not, one thing you can do is ask a question. You say, you know, do you see how this will increase your income? And if you nod your head up and down just a little bit and they mirror you, that would be another signal to you, okay, time to ask for their business. They've already persuaded themselves. It's time to go. Those are the nonverbal type things that you are looking for. Now, some other ones that you'll hear as far as verbal, let's say you're doing this over the phone, you know you're really close and it's time to ask for their business when they ask about specific terms. What exactly is the interest rate we're talking about? Or tell me a little bit more about the product in your network marketing company. So they're asking for specific details. They want more information. That is a good sign. They might ask about the guarantee or the warranty. Does this come with a home warranty? Does your product come with a guarantee? They might ask for another demonstration or walk through the home again or bring a friend to walk through the home. They might ask about delivery or when they can move into their home. They might ask for additional references. Then you know you're close and it's time to, you know, zip it up and ask for their business. And you could also hear things like, well, that's a good deal. That's really inexpensive, or I could see how I'd use that. Or if you're showing somebody a home, well, you know, we'd put the grand piano right there, and the sandbox would go there, and the playset would go over there, and we can put the antique fill-in-the-blank right there. That's when you know visually it's a done deal for them, and you can move on. Just things I want to hammer home today is, on average, you're talking three times too much. On average, you tend to list too many features and benefits, which out-persuades them. And then you need to really watch that demeanor change. Practice your presentation to the point to where you remember you're persuading the whole time. Because we've been taught our whole life not to judge. And we all judge. That's just who we are. So when you're meeting with somebody over the phone or face-to-face, they're judging a variety of things. And let me just give you a quick list of things that people judge you on. And that'll help you, too, develop your presentation, because if you can answer each one of these, then when you get to your call to action, it's much easier. And they're evaluating the whole time. And you have to understand, it's like oscillation when you're in the persuasion process. They're getting, yeah, I'm going to do it. And they're thinking, well, I'm not sure if I should. And I want to do it. And so you need to make sure you hit them when they're ready to do it. So we all know that they're going to judge you as a person. They're judging you. Do you come across as, credible? They're judging you. So that would be your voice if you're over the phone or face-to-face. They are judging you on price. The investment. Okay, that's something they're taking into consideration. And that's a whole other set of training to understand that most people do not buy on price, although that's a very common knee-jerk reaction. So they're looking at the price. The next one, they're judging the company. Is it a big company? Is it just you? Have you just started? Have you been around for 10 years? There's some judgment there with the company. then they're going to judge you on the product or service. And this is how the human mind works. We want to compare it against something. And if your product or service is relatively new, or they don't understand what a nothing down real estate deal is, or they don't understand the type of nutritional product you're representing, it's very confusing to them. You need to be able to compare it to something similar to their mind. They are judging their intuition. I mean, that's the gut check. Does it feel right? And that's one of the biggest ones right there. That's why we say up to 95% of persuasion involves that subconscious trigger, that intuition. And the last one is what we call the forecast. This is what I'm trying to say, is if they can't see themselves doing what you're asking them to do, it doesn't matter if it's the best thing since sliced bread, they won't do it. Let me give you some examples. Network marketing. You could prove to them that you got a great marketing system and a great product, that you're making $2,000 a week, but if they can't see themselves talking to their family and friends, if they can't see themselves telling Uncle Frank their network marketing, if they can't see themselves coming to the meetings, it doesn't matter how good it looks on paper, they will not do it. So great persuaders, you're going to help them see themselves doing what you want them to do, that forecast. In real estate, if they can't see themselves moving from the home, if they can't see themselves selling the home, if you've asked them to do five or six things in a foreclosure type situation, they don't understand it or they can't see themselves doing it, that would also trigger resistance. And that would be very, very important to understand, that the intuition and the forecast and the things that people tend to work on. Okay? So to recap, the way these calls work, I can just give you a quick overview of a persuasion principle, give you one thing to practice this week, and here in a second we'll open up for questions. What I want you to do this week, as you talk to people either face-to-face or over the phone, I want you to quit being so worried about what to say next and listen more for those buying signals. That's when it's time to, okay, shut up, be done. So the nonverbals we talked about and the verbals, then you know it's time to ask for their business. Very, very important. And when you get to that point, you could even say, you know, oh, I have a question in place to really kind of gauge their interest. You know, if I could prove to you how this business would make you an extra $500 a week, will you join, or do I have your business? Or suppose I could get you, restore your credit and get you into another home. Can we work together on this foreclosure? It sounds like you and I are in agreement on this and kind of move on. Or if you're kind of stuck, two things to do if you're stuck, not sure what to say next, or if they're being really resistant. You just say, you know, what do I need to do to get your business? My favorite one is, well, what is the perfect home-based business look like to you? What does the perfect solution look like to you? And then just listen, and they'll reveal everything you need to know to persuade them. Very, very simple. So I want you to learn just to read people. Big thing, remember, their facial expressions will relax, and you be able to read people. So you're looking for their nonverbal gestures and their verbal gestures. That's what we're talking about. So when you get to the place where you ask for their money or to do business, it should be seamless and something that you don't fear. It should be something that excites you. This is what it's all about, and people tend to appreciate that a lot more. So that's what I want you to work on this week. Again, sorry for the technology difficulties there. I don't know if it was the conference system or the phone system on my end, but remember, the calls are recorded, and they're posted on persuasioniq.com/KurtCall, KURTCALL. That's where they post them if you want to go back and review the calls. With that being said, are there any questions about anything we talked today or anything that you're running into?
Could you repeat that website where we can get the recorded calls, please?
You bet. Persuasion IQ. kurtcurt.com, and then you put your slash Kurt, K-U-R-T-C-A-L-L, Kurt Call.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And how long are they kept on, or how far do they go back?
I think they go back at least a month or two. They keep them on there about 6 weeks, I think. So you can back and listen to some of the previous calls. If you're just joining us, we did a call on a four-week series on how to get people to change, which would include yourself or other people, which went over really well. That's one that you can listen to. And those are always available to you. Any other questions? All right, someone's emailing me a question right here about closes. Now, closing skills has its place. Most people use them in the right way. One that I do like that I will share with you, that if you're running into a lot of resistance and you're just not getting anywhere, this is called the Columbo close or the doorknob close. And what happens, you say, well, obviously we're not coming to agreement, and you can stand up and walk to the door and the resistance goes down. And then you just turn around and say, well, you know, it seems like it was a win-win for both of us. What is the main reason we're not doing business together today? Works very, very well for you to find out what their true objection is. That was one that really find out what they're doing. Because most people, they say it's too expensive, again, they don't mean it. It's usually in their mind they can't see themselves doing what they're asking them to do. Okay? Any other questions live or email?
Oh, what is your email address in case I think of one?
It's persuasionsupport@gmail is where we send the questions to.
Persuasionsupport@gmail?
Gmail.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. I got to take another one here. The question is, Kurt, you mentioned that most objections aren't true. How do you know if it's a true objection or a made-up objection? Good question. We don't have a lot of time for that, but I think the biggest thing to understand that is, let's give you the factors here. First of all, you have to ask yourself, does it make sense? If you say, well, you know, I made $50,000 on this real estate deal, and they say, well, it took you 3 months of hard work, that really doesn't make a lot of sense. Or you can make an extra $1,000 a week in network marketing, and they say, well, you have to talk to your family and friends, though. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Well, you know, you can make an extra $30,000 a month doing real estate rentals. But, yeah, but you have to deal with renters. It doesn't make sense because if you're making $30,000 a month, it's not a big deal to deal with renters. And that's the first thing I would say. You ask yourself, does it make sense? The second thing you need to really understand is if they're not interested in the solution, it's a knee-jerk objection. They're just not interested. That's one. One, if it catches you off guard, would be another red flag or something you've already explained. But if you want one, the ones I would really take a look at is they're not interested in the solution. It doesn't make any sense. And you'll notice, too, as you learn to start reading people, and we'll spend more time talking about this, is when they, and this is part of detecting deception, when they tell you a knee-jerk objection that's not true, they're lying to you, they'll look away and they'll come back and look at you. Almost that moment when they're lying to you, they'll look away and they'll come back. And so you're looking for two or three of these things to really indicate that it's not the true objection. And the way you handle that is, well, it's too expensive. If you were to say something like, okay, it's too expensive. Now, if price was not an issue, is it something you would do? Well, I don't know. You know they're making things up. Or here's a good one, too. If they say, well, I need to think about it, which you'll hear, and some people need to do that, and that's okay, but your job as a persuader, you say, okay, great, what exactly do you want to think about? Now, here's the moment of truth. If they say, well, I need to think about everything, you know they're lying to you. But if they say, well, you know, the terms that you're offering here and here, I need to do a little research on, then you know, A, they do need to think about it. You know exactly what they need to think about. You're taking great notes, and you can help solve that objection. That is the key. Good question. All right. Any other questions out there?
Yes, Kurt. How are you?
How am I? I'm doing well, except for the stress of not getting on the call. I've been dialing and dialing. Finally, the only
way
I got
through. Well, I want you to know that three of us had a great conversation before you got on the call.
Oh, good. Glad you were able to have that conversation. I ended up trying getting a cell phone that finally worked, so yeah. So that's the first time it's ever happened with this system, so that's the good news. So that's a rare occurrence, but appreciate you asking. Other than that, it's been a good day.
Well, one of the questions I do have, since I do a lot of phone calling of people who hold private mortgages, and the training that I am receiving is in just going in and trying to retrieve the information of the private mortgage without understanding what the benefits to them would be. And I guess I'm trying to understand, since my way of trying to convince somebody is by the benefits, and so I'm trying to emotionally figure out how to work the phone call.
Well, there's two scenarios there. If you're getting the information from an hourly person, they're just going to do it, right? Is the issue getting the information, or is it the issue getting them to call you back?
No, actually, it's getting the note holder to try and convince them into selling their note.
Okay.
Cashing.
But right now, you're just, yeah, so what is the benefit to them?
Correct. Well, for them to receive the cash for whatever need they may have.
Yeah, so the benefit to them is going to be different. Now, cash is good, but that's really not a benefit. They have to assign a benefit to it. Does that make sense? So cash doesn't
Correct.
Mean anything. So if you could come up with a question to say, well, if I was able to, you know, you find out, if I was able to get you $100,000 on that note, how would that cash benefit you? Well, what would you do with that? How would that help you? Then you can find, well, you know, I could pay this off, and I got this other property I'm looking at. And then they'll tell you right then and there what their benefit is. Because the cash in and
yeah,
of itself.
Yeah, I think you just told me a series of asking the questions, especially if they're not willing to. I'm trying to also figure out how to build that trust so that they'll give me that information that's so personal.
Yeah, and that's another one, too, is building that trust. You think people are trusting you, or what are you thinking?
I'm trying to learn how to build that trust in just a few minutes that we're on the phone, outside of telling them that I would like to provide them a quote.
Okay, and that's something we can spend more time with the weeks coming up. I mean, trust is a function of credibility, it's a function of congruence, and a few other things. The biggest factor in trust is credibility. And right now, you're relatively new in what you're doing. So it is okay to borrow the credibility of somebody else. So have you done this with anybody already where they made the money and they're very happy with your services?
You mean have I made the money or someone else has made the money?
Either you've made it or somebody you know?
Somebody else that I know has made it.
There we go. There's,
I'm
there's
working
somebody
on it.
Borrow credibility from somebody that you're working with, a name that they might recognize. Let them know that that's what you focus on. And sure, too, you let them know that there's certain information that you're going to need. But always ask, I don't know if this is in your formula, but when you're asking questions, you always ask for the easiest questions first. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So you ask for the... You're getting a lot of vital information, but you could want to ask for the easiest vital information first. You don't want to be asking for Social Security number first or a credit card number first. That's always the last because you get them in a pattern to be answering your questions. And also too, you might let them know, there's some questions I need to ask to make sure, you know, I serve you better. If there's a reason or something makes you awkward or uncomfortable, please let me know. I'd be happy to explain it to you and keep the door open. And when they do ask you, you say, well, thank you. I appreciate you bringing that up. You know, some other people have that concern. This is why we need that information to be able to help you out.
Thank you. That helps me a lot. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Kurt, is it better to present more facts or more emotions or both?
You need to have both, bottom line. Emotions are more persuasive than facts. But then understand, too, as a persuader, you need to learn to persuade others how they want to be persuaded. The big mistake is that we tend to persuade others how we like to be persuaded. So if you're dealing with a professional banker, if you're dealing with an analytical person that's a scientist by day, you'll want to do more facts than the average person. But regardless, even if it's a diehard analytical, there's always going to be emotions involved. Real estate's a very emotional business, and you're dealing with people and with feelings. And so the key here is what we call one of the laws of persuasion, the law of balance, is you need to have both, but be able to adjust it on the personality. Now, an amiable people-type person, they want more stories, they want more emotions, and they're not concerned as much about fact. But the key is you always need to have both. It's kind of like a twin engine. You forget one, because this is how the brain works, is that we make decisions based on emotions, but once those emotions leave, we need to have that logic to hold on to. For example, if someone went to a timeshare presentation without their spouse, and they got all excited about it, because that's an emotional thing, vacation and beaches, and they buy an emotion, and they get home, and their spouse is all, "You did what?" They don't have enough logic to back it up. That's the problem, and that's when you get the remorse. And so you need to make sure you have both. We buy an emotion, and then we need that logic. When that emotion leads, we need that logic to hold on to that, yes, we made a good decision.
Okay, thank you so much.
You bet. Any other questions out there? All right. Well, we're going to end the call. We'll be here next week on time, obviously, get the phones to work. And then we're going to spend more time, it sounds like, and you guys can email me, too, with the topics that you want. We spend more time on developing instant trust, connecting rapport. Those are some things that will really help you out with what everyone is doing. So with that, I wish everyone massive success, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much.
You bet. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.